Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us here in the second hour of the show. Our thanks to Patrick Chambers and also to Tim Brando. Coming up this hour, Brian Barnhart, the play-by-play voice of Illinois football and basketball. Brian will join us in just a few minutes. Final half hour, we'll get the perspective from Neil Coulong on the Steelers situation from USA Today. So we'll get to Neil in just a little bit. But before we get to Brian Barnhart, time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Miguel Andujar last night for the Yankees, taking David Price deep.
What is deep to right? JD going back, looking up, and score! And Duhar goes yard.
And Rami, just another reminder how strong that guy is.
It's also a reminder.
Aaron Judge would be proud of that.
And it's also a reminder of where we are.
Understood.
Short porch and right, and Miguel Andujar found it off David Price last night at the stadium in the Bronx for our play-by-play call of the day. Well, speaking of play-by-play, Brian Barnhart for a long time has been the play-by-play voice of Illinois football and basketball. He's done an outstanding job. He has called a national championship game in his career. North Carolina did end up winning it, but he did call the national title game in basketball, and he's also called the Sugar Bowl, and he's called the Rose Bowl along the way. And with that, we welcome in the outstanding play-by-play voice of Illinois football and basketball, my good friend Brian Barnhart. Brian, great to hear from you. It's great to have you on the show.
Hey, it's great to hear from you. Look forward to seeing you here in a couple of days.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well. They're off to a 2-1 start. Brian, this should be 3-0. What is the level I want to talk about what Lovey's done. It looked to me last year he made the commitment saying, you know, I recruited these guys, I'm going to start playing them. Is that about how it's played out?
That's basically, you're right on target, Steve. It's been a case. The first year he came in so late, if you remember, it didn't get hired until the spring. They moved spring ball back and pushed it almost to May. Not quite that late, but it was late. And then, so this is really the second year. I mean, he was here the first year physically, but he just kind of came in like a mechanic and started kind of working in the garage to see what he had and see what he was working with. Last year, you're right, he committed to playing. I forget, it was 20-some-odd freshmen that made their debuts last year, and then those guys, of course, gained a year of experience. Then they took their lumps, but they did gain a lot of experience, especially on the offensive line. And then this year, he's added another class of some really talented freshmen who have already made an impact. And so, yeah, it's definitely, when you look at the overall roster, I think we have, like, if you count everybody, walk-ons and everybody, it's like 38 freshmen and 39 sophomores. So this is a really, really young team still. But I thought in the first half, especially against South Florida, who, you know, going into that game, Steve, if you'd have told an Illini fan, based on what happened the year before in South Florida where we got blown out, that you would have the lead with 2 minutes to go, you'd be without your starting quarterback, you'd have some guys that were missing for various reasons, injuries or otherwise, and have a chance to win the game with 2 minutes left, you'd have taken it. And so while they were disappointed they lost on a late touchdown, they played one of their more complete games we've seen in a couple of years.
You mentioned injuries and otherwise. You know, the couple guys we know are bumped up, including Bush had been bumped up as well. But what about the otherwise? Because he had to show some discipline with his football team. And Lovey did. He suspended some guys. Now, some have been out 3 games. Any idea on, now we know Larry Boyd's out, but any idea beyond him as to how he wanted to play this out?
Well, the general feeling was, and it was a violation of team rules, and as you know, they generally don't tell you what those are. People are left to kind of guess as to what it is. But the general feeling was that the suspension was going to be about 3 games. So we played 3 games. And there were a lot of people that were going into the South Florida game, Steve, that were like, huh, I wonder if there's any way he just limited it to 2. And it was like, no, he's this, you know, the general belief that they were suspended. They're going to be out three games, and we've reached three, and now we're at game four. And so Lovey has and never will tell you what he's about to do, but the general consensus is among media in town that, you know, those guys are likely to be available to play, whether they start or not, but right. No official word from anybody with a football program, and probably won't be until we see them run out there.
Bush has been now with his fourth program, the one before this was Virginia Tech, and then there's the kid Rivers. What have you liked about the two quarterbacks?
Well, A.J. Bush, we got to keep our letters straight here. A.J. Bush, it's A.J. and M.J., but yeah, A.J. Bush, you're right. He was the third-string quarterback in Nebraska. He got behind Tommy Armstrong, of course, which he didn't get to play there. And then he went to junior college, Iowa Western. Then he was at Virginia Tech and got beat out by a freshman quarterback. And he finally landed at Illinois, and he quickly, with all the young quarterbacks we had a sophomore and then several freshmen, including M.J. Rivers, and it just became apparent in camp as we watched, and it was like, hey, I think we know who the starter should be. A.J. Bush is very mobile. He threw for 190, rushed for about 130 in the first game against Kent State. He's very fleet of foot, very quick on his feet, throws a pretty good ball. But he's just more mobile, and with the Rod Smith offense, with the multiple and the spread offense they want to run, they just thought he fitted well. He was a fifth-year guy, and right. To tell you, Steve, he not only did he get beat out last year, but he was voted as his teammates the captain at Virginia Tech. He was on the leadership council, which tells you a lot about the young man, that he didn't just, you know, pout about it, that he was a leader on the team. So it became apparent that who should be the starter. Then he got hurt, and we didn't know who might come in. It was either going to be Matt Robinson, a young man they liked from California, or M.J. Rivers from Texas. And M.J. played really well. He went right in. He was poised. As you know, in Texas, football is a huge deal. He's used to playing in front of big crowds. So he showed a lot of poise. I think of the two, he's probably got a stronger arm. Just throwing the football, he gets it there in a hurry on a tight rope. He's not quite as mobile as A.J. is, but I thought for a kid who, you know, making his first start in college at Soldier Field in Chicago, I thought he managed the game really well. You know, they didn't ask him to do a lot, but what he did do, he did fairly well. He made some freshman mistakes, but the general feeling, again, is nobody has said officially, but is if Bush is healthy, he's the starter. If he's not healthy enough to go, then it'll be Rivers.
I'm watching the tape, and I decided the one I wanted to watch was South Florida because of what happened last year. How well has that offensive line come on for Illinois, and what kind of a difference have they made?
Well, they made a big difference, and they and the other day, I mean, and you saw it on tape. I mean, the run blocking was terrific.
Yes,
I mean, Nick Allegretti was great at a right guard spot. He's an All Big Ten type performer, and did some pulling and did some great blocking. The right side they really liked was Alcheski, who took his lumps last year as a freshman, but they like him a lot in together on that right side. And then just Vidarian Lowe lost about 40 pounds and put on some muscle, and so he's still a pretty hefty 320 or so, but he was up about 360 last year. And so they've come together really well, in a good center in Kramer and an athletic guard as well that they moved from the defense. So the run blocking they were very happy with. We rushed for over 200 yards for the third straight game. And then the pass blocking, they did give up too many sacks. And so of the two areas, they were a little stronger in the run game. But that's what the spread offense is. And when you think spread, people think pass happy. It's not that. They do throw it, and they do try to go with a tempo. But the idea is to run the ball. And they've got two really good scat backs in Epstein and Corbin, who you get them in space, whether you throw it to them in the flat or out of the backfield or hand them the ball. With the blocking that we had last week up front that you talked about, we had a couple of guys right at, I think one guy was 98 and the other was 113. So they ran the ball very well.
Defensively, of course, that's been Lovey's calling card forever, whether getting the Rams into the Super Bowl defensively or what he did, obviously, with Chicago and Tampa Bay. So what differences have you seen in the Illinois defense, and is there a couple subtle things schematically that you can tell his imprint is there?
Well, I think, you know, and a lot of people around here, of course, we grew up, those in my generation, the 46 defense of the Bears. So around here, everybody wants to blitz all the time, but they can't do that. I mean, they're too young in the secondary. They don't want to leave those guys on an island too much. So it's very much a, you know, cover two. It's a, It's a defense where they bend, but they don't break. Now, they gave up a lot of yards all told by the end of the game last week.
Right.
But, you know, Bobby Roundtree, I think, has taken another step up on the defensive end. Isaiah Gay has improved. They love Timer Oliver in the middle. He's a young man, I think, from the state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Is in that offensive line. They love him. And so they love those fronts. Jamal Woods has been playing well. I think the linebackers are where they're really the strongest, though. Jake Hansen is a guy that nobody knew much about other than the coaches raved about him in camp. And then he starts off the first game with 15 tackles and 6 tackles for loss and tied the school record in one game. And he's solid. Delshawn Phillips is one of the rare seniors. He's solid. Fans around here, they want to be more aggressive, but I think they're so young in the secondary, they're playing it safe. They're trying to get pressure where they can, but also don't give up, you know, the big plays. And unfortunately, at times, because of the young guys we've had, because we've been missing a Bennett Williams, we've been missing Nate Hobbs, another guy that's played a lot of games, and so that hurts us in that area. But I think defensively, we've got some pieces. We just, as a unit, have to get better.
The kicking part of the ball, I mean, you've done this for a while, Brian. Are they as good, if not better, than any kicking duo you've had there?
Yeah, we've talked about that. Lauren Tate, you know, who's been around here forever.
Yeah.
We were talking with him. I did a show with him Monday. And trying to remember when we've had two kickers, a punter and a kickoff, or kicker, place kicker, as strong as Chase McLaughlin and Blake Hayes. We can't remember. We've had one or the other. We had Steve Weatherford here.
Yeah.
Still the all-time punt average leader, and of course had a long career in the NFL. He's one of the best we've ever seen. But I mean, Blake Hayes has been unbelievable. And this was a guy from Australia, Melbourne, Australia, who's pretty tall. He's 6'6" or so, and he's left-footed. But he had never even seen a football game before last year.
Right.
He played Australian rules football down there, and not only does he have a great leg, Steve. He's kicking it. I don't know how many times over 50 yards. But he's put, I think it's 11 or 12 kicks inside the 20. And what, as you know, what a weapon it is to be able to, if you're, you know, push back a little bit, to flip the field and to pin the other team deep. And then McLaughlin is a guy who really he didn't stand out a couple of years ago, but he's just gotten better and better. He's done the weight training. He strengthened his leg. And he's made, 3 field goals from outside of 50 yards with a long of 54. And a couple of those 54, 53-yard field goals could have been good from 60. I mean,
right.
He just boomed them. So, if you're on offense, as you know, if you're close enough to kick a long field goal and you got the trust in the guy, that gets you 3 points. With the punter, he can flip the field. The problem last week was that we had drives going and we had to settle for field goals, and that ultimately cost us the game because we got 3 instead of 6.
Right. And the old saying is you need 3 field goals to beat a touchdown. What about the response to Illinois football? Basketball, I mean, it can be a sellout all the time there. Football, you've seen great days, Rose Bowl years, and obviously some tough days. They had about, 21,000 at Soldier Field on Saturday. So what has the acceptance been of this new era of Illinois football?
Well, it's been, the attendance has been down. In recent years. Part of that was all the turmoil we went through, and I know, speaking of turmoil, we're in no position to, Penn State went through their own turmoil, so as you well know, we just went through so many coaching changes after Ron Zook was let go in 2011, between Tim Beckman and Bill Cuban and now Lovie Smith, so it's just taken a while to kind of recover from all the turnover, and I think what Josh Whitman set out to do, the athletic directors, when he hired Lovie Smith, A, make a splash, and B, say, here's a 6-year contract, we can extend it if we need to, but we'll go 6 years, and we're just going to build this thing from the ground up, and we're going to start over. And so fans right now are kind of waiting to see the result of that. Show me what you have. This is not the show me state, Missouri is, but it's kind of that, I think, right now. I think people have been very patient. They understand the rebuild. But it is, right now, it's a basketball school more so than a football school. Basketball, and I think the big thing is, Steve, basketball was so consistent for so long.
Yeah.
When Lou Henson took over in the late 70s when I was a kid, and it just, built steadily NCAA tournaments year after year after year, and that's what Brad Underwood's trying to get back there now. But there's always the passion for basketball. Football fans here are what they get discouraged is when you go to a Rose Bowl or you go to a Sugar Bowl, as we did in the last 20 years,
yep.
And then you go back to 2-10, and you go back to 1-11, or you fall back the next year after the bowl appearance to 5-7. And that's been just the inconsistency of it all, and that's what they're trying to get is some consistency. Because here, this isn't Ohio State or Penn State or Michigan where, you know, the expectation is going in, we want to win 10 or 11 or 12 games. Fans here just say, hey, let's be consistent like Iowa. Let's be consistent like Michigan State, or let's be consistent like Minnesota even, where you win 6, 7, 8 games, compete for a Big Ten title once in a while. Fans here with football are a little more forgiving, but they do expect you to compete, and I think we're starting to see that. Basketball, they're much more demanding. It's you need to start with 20 wins and go from there. And so they're a little more sensitive to basketball. But football, if you're doing well in football, they will come. It's just a matter of they've got to show and beat some quality teams, and, you know, a team like Penn State coming in, that would help, obviously.
One final question. That deals with being on Friday night. Obviously, the program will enjoy the exposure of being on Friday night. I think there are only two other games being played on Friday night. So there's going to be, boom, Penn State, Illinois. All right. How have the high school coaches reacted to this in the state? Because high school football, like Pennsylvania, is a big deal in Illinois.
It is. You're right. Yeah. I would say if you polled them, the majority would be they don't like it, the high school coaches, especially some of the downstate areas. And I know the state college is in a rural area too, but,
yeah.
We're downstate. There's Chicago, and then there's the rest of the state. And the downstate schools, my high school, Unity High School, a few miles away, St. Joseph Ogden, you go to a Maroa Forsyth, you go to the different schools around. High school football on Friday is a huge deal.
Yep.
Now, in Champaign, it's not as big a deal. It's a little more basketball, and they've actually played some games on Saturday. I know the Chicago public schools play more Saturday games now than they used to. And so it's not as foreign an idea as it used to be to play some on Saturday. And, of course, the state high school playoff games are always on Saturday, so they get a little bit used to that. But, I would say the high school coaches in general are not a big fan of it. But I think Lovie Smith is sensitive to that. He understands, hey, he grew up in Texas. He gets high school football on Friday. But he says his guys, hey, to get to this level, they all had to play on Friday night. They like playing under the lights. They like night games. And his guys have told him at times, because they usually go to movies on Friday night,
right?
So they'd almost rather watch a college game. So I don't know if it's, it's becoming a little less of an issue along the way. But it's still, I think, for a lot of downstate schools around Champaign especially, it's, they'd prefer the game be on Saturday. But, it is what it is.
It is what it is. I always find it, because I remember talking with Tim Newton about this. And I said, Tim, and my thought was, when it first came out, I said, well, Tim, this will be good for Purdue or Illinois, whatever, get some exposure. And he says, the high school coaches in this state are pushing back. I said, okay. So that's why I asked the question, just based on that response. Mm-hmm. Brian, always a pleasure, my good friend. It is great to hear you. Can't wait to see you. I know we'll talk later today.
Well, good. Steve, you're a great friend, and keep up the great work out there, and we'll look forward to seeing you on a Friday night. So you'll be coming out here tomorrow. So.
Coming out there tomorrow. Yeah. I mean, it's and you know how when we get there, we pretty much just set the town ablaze. So, I mean, that's just the way we are.
That's right. Look out.
Yeah, look out. Crazy guys. Yeah, we're the definition of insanity. That's who we are. Hey, Brian, thanks so much. Brian Barnhart, play-by-play voice of Illinois football and basketball. And I'll see Brian, obviously, tomorrow night. It'll be a 9 o'clock kickoff tomorrow night. We will have the Shikellamy game with Jersey Shore first, and then they will join our broadcast in progress, although I think the timing might end up being pretty close. But they'll join our broadcast tomorrow night in progress from Memorial Stadium in Champaign. We got a lot of high school football coming up tomorrow night. Selins Grove is going to be in action tomorrow evening. Lewisburg, you have Lewisburg on 100.9 The Valley. Selins Grove is going to be on Eagle 107. And, of course, Shikellamy in action with Jersey Shore. That game is going to be Schick will be home tomorrow night, and then it'll lead right into Penn State football with Illinois at Memorial Stadium in Champaign. Coming up in the final half hour, the Steelers, as Ron Cook outlined on yesterday's show, right now are an 0-1-1 mess. Neil Coulwong from USA Today is going to join us. We'll get his perspective on the 0-1-1 mess as they get ready to take on Tampa Bay Monday night. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. As we continue here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Final half hour of the show. Thanks to Brian Barnhart, the play-by-play voice of Illinois, who joined us in the previous half hour. Also to Patrick Chambers and Tim Brando. This half hour, Neil Coulwong, USA Today, on the 0-1-1 mess. That is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Oh, what the heck. We'll have fun with it and talk with Neil about that. Get his perspective in just a few moments. But first, before we get to Neil, of course, I'm with Jack Ham, Derek Williams, Roger Corey, and Jeff Tarman tonight here in Champaign-Urbana. We're going to do the show again tomorrow live here from Champaign. And looking forward to that, and then lead into Shikellamy football, which will then lead into Penn State football tomorrow night. So I'm talking to Dick, and Dick said, hey, you know, we just, you know, Karen and I just went on this cross-country trip. He said, and then part of it was visiting their son, Mike, who's in Colorado. So he said the first place I wanted to go was Del Mar, out by San Diego. Okay? Beautiful, just get out there on the coast, the whole thing. And Dick said, I broke a Cardinal Dick Girardi rule. And I said, oh, don't tell me you did not take a nonstop flight. He goes, no. He said there was a layover in Dallas. He said, massive thunderstorm hits. He says that closes the airport for 2 hours and just takes every flight off the board for four. He says, I can't believe I broke my Cardinal rule. See, Dick has certain hard and fast rules. And that's one of them right there. And that just wrecked everything. Now, someone who has perfect travel every time, I'm sure, is Neil Coulwong, USA Today. Hello, Neil. How are you?
Definitely not. And I hate boarding planes. I don't go peacefully if I don't have to.
I hear you. Oh, Dick, I talked to Dick Girardi yesterday, my basketball broadcast partner. And he just made a trip. He went west. He went out to San Diego, went to Del Mar, and then he went up to see his, you know, he and his wife went to see his son in Colorado. Mm-hmm. He said, I broke my Cardinal rule. I said, what? I said, you always take nonstop flights. He goes, I know. He said, we had to go through Dallas. He said, thunderstorm, 2 hours, canceled all the flights. He said, there you go. There's your Cardinal rule right there. Okay. The Steelers are a mess. Why?
Why? That's an excellent question. I couldn't tell you why. But I can confirm that certainly from an objective opinion that they absolutely are a mess. This is a team that has not won a football game yet this season and seems to be getting worse. It seems to be almost orchestrated in a way. It's
it's an implosion. I mean, really, you've got talent on the team. There's no doubt about that. People had high aspirations for the team this season, but just the way that they have conducted their business and gone about it, both on the field and off, it's really hard to see where those projections might have come from or why they did. But it's getting worse by the day. I mean, it's, you know, there are two, three things that happen every single day. And to some degree, it takes effort to bump off the headlines, the fact that an all-pro running back who's offered $14.5 million a year is not showing up to sign that contract. That's not even a story right now. I mean, it's a mess. It's a mess. It's going to get probably a little bit uglier before it gets better, but it's absolutely a mess today.
By not being there, in some ways, is he kind of tearing this thing apart?
You know, I really don't want to think that. I really don't think something like that should have caused this. But at the same time, what I would say more that it's the reaction to it, and not specifically because you had offensive linemen, well-decorated ones, union reps, all-pro veterans in the locker room that are calling them out for it. It's more of the idea that they're okay with going public with all of these things. To me, from an organizational perspective, that gives the unspoken permission for everybody else to kind of, you know, air their thoughts on everything. Antonio Brown doesn't seem capable of going more than 24 hours without creating his own, bitter type of storyline. Bud Dupree responding to somebody trolling him on social media and responding in a very crude and graphic way. All of these things, in my mind, it's not a knee-jerk reaction. Frustrations are out there, obviously, but I don't know if Bud Dupree noticed, but most other players in the league don't respond to those kinds of things, and they probably get it on a weekly basis, if not more. That's not right in and of itself. I think it's gross what the guy said to him, but his response is completely over the line, not even close to necessary. It just really makes you kind of wonder the level of security of the players on the team. I mean, this isn't the way that you win football games, and we're seeing that on the field in Pittsburgh.
Right. Let's get to Patrick Mahomes. Now, obviously, we have a limited sample size on him. So I'm not going to sit here and go, oh, my goodness, this is the second coming of Johnny Unitas. All right. But in that limited sample size, he's done a terrific job. Now, let's just see once people get more video on him and on the Chiefs at midseason and so forth, how he responds. But what did you think when you finally really got a chance to look at Patrick Mahomes as the kind of quarterback he is right now?
I feel justified. This was the guy I absolutely loved in college. I'll admit some bias. Growing up a Minnesota Twins fan, I watched his dad pitch I don't know how many games, but right. And certainly Patrick is a lot better than his dad is to this point. But I absolutely love his makeup. I love the way that he approaches the game. He's fearless. He's absolutely fearless, and we saw that Sunday. You're right. It is a limited sample size, but in that limited sample size, he's better than Unitas. I mean, he goes out and makes plays. He wants to get the ball down the field, and he basically dares the defense to stop him. And if you don't stop him, you're going to see what happened to the Steelers in week two happen a lot more often. He's a high-level player. He's really good for the time that he's been in there. And the scary thing is, yeah, he might have a bad game or two, but his game overall is only going to get better. The sky's the limit with him. Great physical makeup. He reads the field very, very well, which yeah. I'm even surprised that he's capable of doing this early into his career. He's phenomenal, and he showed it. I don't think he's going to throw five touchdown passes a game for the rest of his career, but you're going to see him at the end being one of the two or three best quarterbacks in the league. I'm sure of that simply because he's very well coached. He's taken everything that he's been taught and applied it to his game. He's 1,000% better than he was in college. And like I said, I loved him coming out. I could see that it was a project, but man, you couldn't have had a better fit. Andy Reid has done a phenomenal job coaching him up, and you're going to see the Chiefs win a lot of games this year.
And keep in mind, this is a Kansas City team that, with Alex Smith at quarterback a couple of years ago, did not have a wide receiver catch a touchdown pass in a season. What difference are you seeing in the Chiefs receiving corps versus now what you're seeing with the back seven for the Steelers?
Yeah, well, therein lies the problem for Pittsburgh. I mean, it was an equal opportunity touchdown catch game for them. I mean, they gave up everything to everybody. Overall, I think the Pittsburgh Steelers had a shocking lack of awareness in the defense that they were supposed to be running. I tweeted out right after it happened. The second touchdown catch, I forget, there were so many of them, but it looked like Artie Burns might have been beat on a post or a cross route. The reality was Artie Burns was covering the other guy, and Burns just chased him down because nobody was covering the inside receiver. Burns didn't succeed in that play, and it certainly wasn't a plus game for him either. You might remember Tyreek Hill's touchdown catch, in which Burns literally was not competitive in even a nanosecond of that snap. The ball was snapped, and he was beat. You could even see it just by his body language. He knew he was getting taken deep, and Hill just fried him.
It's just
but the Steelers defense has a long way to go, and it's just embarrassing to see in week two that the level of communication errors, the amount of communication errors, the amount of mental mistakes that they had, it's really hard at this point seeing how this is going to be a mid-rate level defense. They've got a lot of problems, both talent and coaching. It's going to be a tough haul for them.
Because guess what? This game really played out in a lot of ways like the Jacksonville game did in the playoffs, where it put a lot of pressure on the Steeler offense to keep up with these people.
Yeah, and even when the Steelers offense came back, it was like, okay, well, you still need to keep going. I mean, probably like any Steelers fan, I was like, all right, well, 21-all, okay, all right, bad start, but fine. Now it's a track meet. Let's see what happens in the second half. The Chiefs kept going.
Yes.
And the Steelers then got stopped, which normally teams will get stopped after scoring three consecutive touchdowns, but not the Chiefs. It was so reminiscent to the Jacksonville game. I'm getting a huge kick out of the local media that are raising an eyebrow or two over Mike Tomlin's decision to not onside kick the ball toward the end of the game. This is pretty much the same situation in which he kicked an onside kick last year against Jacksonville. Didn't
get
it, and he got shredded for that. Now you're going to make headlines out of the idea that he didn't. It's like he can't stop either of these offenses. Which one do you want him to do? If you get to a point in which an onside kick has to determine whether or not you still have a chance of winning a game, you've already lost. 99 times out of 100, you've already lost. Now, the new rules that have been set in place, an onside kick is really hard.
It's
pretty much impossible.
Right.
I mean, you're not going to be able to do it. I don't think Mike Tomlin's teams have recovered an onside kick in the time that he's been coaching. That wasn't the time to.
I believe you're right about that. I believe you're right about that. I don't think the Steelers have ever recovered an onside kick since the Cowher era. I think that is actually accurate.
Yeah, and what it really shows, it's far less about skill. And let's point out that Chris Boswell once literally whiffed on an onside kick attempt. Oh. It's less about skill than it is just the ball is going to bounce a certain way. The football gods are either going to give you a chance to win the game or they're not. It's an extremely low percentage desperation. We don't have any other card to play attempt. And you understand why a team does it when they do it. But passing on an onside kick will never be the reason you lost a game. That's what it comes down to. They lost that game pretty quickly into that game. And there are some good things to take away. But in the end, you're much more comfortable if that's a week one performance that tends to be kind of slanted around the league. I mean, you look at the Jets. Everybody loved the Jets in week one. They got crushed in week two.
Right.
Shouldn't be a surprise if you follow the NFL. The Steelers should have put up a far better effort in week two than they did in week one. Instead, they put back-to-back week one efforts together, and you've got to be concerned.
An area that's fortunate they kept him in the games, they do have Ben Roethlisberger. I'm not saying Roethlisberger is at this moment Brady, and right now Mahomes is playing better at quarterback than Roethlisberger, but he's still Ben Roethlisberger. How much more pressure is on him now because of how this is playing out?
The thing is, I'm not even sure it does. I think, as odd as this seems, I think the Steelers have kind of crossed the threshold of quarterback pressure in the sense that Ben, his second quarter was close to as flawless as you're going to see.
That's right.
Just a phenomenal quarter of football. He was locked in to the offense that they were running, and they shredded. Granted, the Chiefs don't have a great defense this year. They're not going to be a great defensive team, but Ben destroyed them play by play, up and down the field. He did a great job. He played a great game, and in typical Ben Roethlisberger fashion, he responded from a poor outing the week before with a really good game. And the Steelers still were really not competitive most of the second half. For him to have run it in the way that he did, it shows you that he's a leader, he's inspired, he wants to win, he wants to play the game. It was a great play. That honestly was one of the best, or at least most inspirational plays he's made in several years. You have to love that. But if he puts up the performance that he did, if you have an offense that scores 37 points at home and doesn't turn the ball over, and you really weren't competitive for most of the game, you've got a much bigger problem on your hands than how your quarterback does. If he has an average game, there's not much else he can do. So in my mind, it's not going to be on him if he doesn't play well. So he can kind of just, you know, turn it loose. I really think that's what they should probably do at this point.
Speaking of turning loose, Jameis Winston may be on the verge of that. The Ryan Fitzpatrick, the greatest backup September quarterback in the history of the game. We will not go through his October, November, December stats, but September, he's dynamic. He's got some talent around him. What are the concerns going into this one on, I think it was it's a Monday night game, so...
For me, I think what's really interesting about this is more about the immediate future legacy of Dirk Koetter. He's an offensive guru. He's a great quote. His players love him, blah, 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 blah. He hasn't done squat as a head coach in the NFL.
Right.
And he's doing that with the guy that probably has as much, if not more, arm talent than any other quarterback in the league. I mean, Winston can sling it. He really is an amazing passer. Koetter has not been able to do anything with him to this point. He puts Fitzpatrick in somehow or other. You've resurrected a legend somehow or other. You've got Roy Hobbs coming off the bench now in Tampa Bay. It makes absolutely no sense at all, but you watch it. It's like, yeah, you can, these aren't broken plays. These guys are taking it to him. He's the only quarterback who's made Dirk Koetter's offense actually work. So if you're Dirk Koetter, what you're really saying
is, and that includes Arizona,
so Winston's the problem here, not me. You can't fire me after this season. This was a good thing that he got suspended.
Yes.
That's a weird situation for a team to be in.
Yes, it is.
And they're living it up. I would say this, though, that the Steelers have destroyed any and all offense that Fitzpatrick has been a part of when they've seen him. They've crushed Fitzpatrick in the past. I mean, you're talking Jason Campbell-level bad against Pittsburgh. Tampa Bay, to this point, that offense looks indestructible.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to bet on that happening for a third game, not when all of this is going on to a point where, for the first time in my career, I legitimately say Mike Tomlin really is kind of getting a little bit warm where he's sitting right now. There are problems in this team up and down. This is the week Tomlin's going to have their focus. And we've seen this in the past. He's resurrected a couple of these teams from bad starts. Bad starts are not rare for Mike Tomlin's Steelers.
We've
seen that several times. So for me, you're looking at a team that's doing stuff that physical properties didn't prove were even possible before now versus a team where there are several people's jobs that are on the line. I like Pittsburgh in this one pretty big. I don't think we're going to see the Conor McGregor impression of Ryan Fitzpatrick next week. As much as I love it, I just don't think we're going to see that again.
Bold, Neil. Very bold. All right. So we'll check out on Monday night. We'll check back with you on Tuesday. Just very quickly, what do you think of this let's play 10 minutes and tie the game rule?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
It's unfortunate because really the rules are prevented to do anything but have a tie and to have them in back-to-back weeks, to have the controversy surrounding it. Maybe that's really the issue. Let's get into that. To me, basically for fans, you hate rules when they're enforced on your team. If they're not enforced on your team, you probably don't care. I mean, you might even understand why they're there.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is I didn't see anything coming from the league that suggested what Clay Matthews did was not going to be a penalty.
Right.
I don't understand the uproar. There's no way in the world you could possibly look at that objectively and say, no, this is not a definition of what they're trying to prevent.
Right.
And you know why I know that? Because Aaron Rodgers missed most of last season because of it.
Yeah.
That's why they're doing it. Clay Matthews has no leg to stand on in this situation
at
all.
Right.
He's a player that's having a microphone put in his face with the opportunity to save what's left of his career. This is a guy who looks like walking dead right now. He's horrible. You can't possibly say what he did. Whether you like the rule or not is a different story. You can't possibly say what he did does not fit the exact description of what the league was trying to prevent when they decided to intensify the rule.
Well, if you read it, he followed it to a T.
Which is exactly why the league went out of its way to come out and say, we're going to take this film and teach officials this is what not to do. That's how strong they are in their conviction that this is a problem. They don't even usually respond to these kinds of things, let alone go as far as to say, this is how we're fattening up our re-education of officials to NFL football. You don't see it. So for me, it's like, yeah, Packers land, I'm sorry you're upset. But, you know, one, Eric Kendricks got called for the same exact play earlier in the game.
He was.
And two, if you didn't know that this was a rule now, I don't know what your coaching staff is doing, but they should have told you. Plain and simple, you should have known that that's not allowed anymore.
I mean, they're not even putting him in State Farm commercials with Rodgers anymore. All right, so you know that you're on the tail end when? Because you've gone from the sidekick to being no kick. All right, thanks so much, Neil. Always appreciate it. It's always fun.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulon, USA Today. Our thanks to Neil and Brian Barnhart and Patrick Chambers and Tim Brando for all being on the show today. Tomorrow, we're back here in Champaign, Urbana. The Nittany Lions tomorrow night will take on Illinois. We'll talk to you tomorrow from Champaign on News Radio 1070 WKOK.